Good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Wednesday, August the 17th, 2016, 12:16 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You're tuned into the Now program. I am Scott Spears, and we're going to do something very special this hour. I want to tell you really quick what's coming up next hour. We're going to be joined at 1 o'clock by Janice Stillman, the editor of the Old Farmer's Almanac, the first female editor who's going to let us know what winter is going to be like in this area. So stay tuned next hour. But this hour, we're going to remember a gentleman who meant a lot to me. I never met him. I never interviewed him. But I can tell you that my DVR has been set to record his program since the beginning of DVRs, since I've had one. And I've been watching his program since it started 34 years ago. Sadly, we all learned that John McLaughlin, the legendary host of the McLaughlin Group, had passed away at the age of 89. We are going to remember him with a longtime panelist on that show, Eleanor Clift, columnist for the Daily Beast, in just one second. But before we do that, let's hear that voice. Let's look back and listen to the career of John McLaughlin.
Here's the host, John McLaughlin.
Issue one. On a doomsday scale of 0 to 10. 0 meaning zero doom. 10 meaning absolute metaphysical doom, a total wipeout, annihilation, nothing remaining.
Exit question. Which end of Pennsylvania Avenue will drive the public policy agenda for the next 2 years? Capitol Hill or the White House? Patrick.
The answer is Capitol Hill. What happens next? Fred Bonds.
Eleanor, minority party, Cliff. Also are the big losers. The tired, the poor, the huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the homeless, the tempest-tossed, the wretched refuse of teeming shores.
Question on a political probability scale of 0 to 10. 0 being zero probability and 10 meaning metaphysical absolute certitude.
The Klansman is a good candidate.
What? What?
Well, there's a twist. Foley's a winner. What do you know, Jack? Worst administration appointment to date, Pat Buchanan.
Bye-bye.
Only one John McLaughlin, and I do want to mention that Eleanor Clift is a columnist for the Daily Beast, and she penned a great article you can get saying goodbye to John McLaughlin, TV's original tough political talker. We're so happy today, sad about the occasion, to be joined by Eleanor Clift. Eleanor, how are you?
Oh, thank you so much. That was a very nice tribute to John and the show and the whole ethos that he created around political talk, and I'm so glad that you've been a fan for so long. That's wonderful.
Well, you know, Eleanor, when I was getting ready this morning, I thought this is really a thrill for me because it's on in our area on Friday nights at 8:30 on the PBS affiliate. I've been watching you for years.
Right. Well, I haven't been on from the absolute start, but pretty close to it, and we tape the show on Friday afternoon, so you get it pretty hot off the presses, as you might say, and the political combat on the McLaughlin Group is almost pretty tame compared to what you see on the cable channels today. I think John always wanted to take on the tough issues, and he understood that you had to make it entertaining in order to get people to watch. But he did have a way about him to get at sort of the nub of the argument and getting the left and the right to, butt heads, basically, over the issues of the day. And it was always a lot of fun to be on, although I must say I never left a show without thinking, oh, I should have said that, or, oh, maybe I shouldn't have said that. He created a climate where you kind of had to blurt out what you actually thought, and you didn't have time to add in all the caveats that might avoid getting you into trouble.
You know, Eleanor, when I was putting that tribute together this morning, I thought, well, you know, it is kind of maudlin when somebody passes away. The mood is a little somber, but that's how the show was. Yeah, he calls you Eleanor Minority Party Clift in that that package. That's just who he was.
Right, exactly. And he also, in the Saturday Night Live spoof that they did, called me Eleanor, I think you're Swellinor. So that was good, too. And when the Clintons came to town, and I was always the left-leaning panelist on the show, And so, therefore, I would be defending the Clinton administration. He began to call me Eleanor Rodham Cliff, and he would talk about creeping Rodhamism as Hillary Clinton and her radical feminist ideas were going to take over the world. So I now look back at it quite fondly, and I'm really sad that he's going to miss November when I could have... I think she has a good chance of winning. I could have lorded it all over him. I'm going to miss that as much as he's going to miss it too.
You know, it's very interesting because he really had strong opinions and didn't mind saying them and didn't mind telling people they were wrong on the air. What kind of guy was he off the camera?
He's a former Jesuit priest, and anyone who's been around the Jesuits or been educated by the Jesuits will recognize John as a type. The Jesuits are, you know, full of moral certitude. They're actually referred to as the Green Berets of the Army of God. And so John wasn't that different off the set than he was on the set, frankly. You didn't so much have a conversation with him as he would sort of drill you for information, and he would, you know, change the topic a lot. You move around various issues, so it wasn't like the red light would go on and he would put on an act. I mean, this is who the man was, and I think that authenticity is what made the show so successful.
I think I and yourself and other journalists, and like I say, I do watch every week, have noticed in the last couple years that there were some subtle changes to John. Got a little slimmer, the voice, he wasn't as assertive in the shows, there was a cushion on his chair, silly things to pay attention to, but
right,
that he wasn't doing so well. But I was still shocked last week when the show opened up and he wasn't there.
Right, it was the first time, as you said earlier, in 34 years that chair was vacant. And they put up a statement where he said he was, quote, under the weather, but we knew it was worse than that. But frankly, you know, we've all been watching the decline in his health, and I thought it was, you know, just aging, not that aging is insignificant. But the fact that he had been diagnosed with prostate cancer, I think a year and a half ago, that he did not share with anyone. And it was that cancer that finally got out of control, just really in the last several weeks. Because the last show that he was physically there for, you could see it was a struggle. He really couldn't sit all that straight in the chair, and he had a pillow under him. He'd gotten so thin. In retrospect, I should have recognized that he had an illness and it was probably cancer. But I think we all wanted to think that somehow there was an exception being made for him and he would continue forever. So it was a shock to us when the Friday after the Democratic convention, we were told that he would not be able to make it to the set, and they put out an old show. And he missed the next week, and it was the third week then that they felt that they had to be more honest with the viewers. But, you know, we knew that it was not just being under the weather that the end was near. And I'm not really quite sure how we're going to handle it this weekend, whether they'll do a show that will just feature clips or whether we panelists will assemble. I think that decision has not yet been made.
It is the McLaughlin Group. It's quick to be talking about this, but it is the McLaughlin Group. Do you think it will continue?
No, I really don't know. He owned the show, so I assume his estate would have some say over that. The sponsoring station, principally the PBS station in Chicago, is the flagship station. You know, that kind of conversation is conducted by people other than myself. I find it really hard to walk away from that platform in the middle of such a, you know, bizarre election season. So I hope it can continue in some way, but it was his creation, and it's hard to imagine the McLaughlin Group without John McLaughlin. So it would have to be reimagined in a somewhat different way, and maybe maybe some greater minds are thinking about that now. But right now, I think we're mostly concerned with, you know, honoring John and his memory and making sure that he gets every due bit of attention that he deserves after such a long and really groundbreaking career.
Yeah, absolutely. As I say, the Daily Beast is where people need to go to see this article saying goodbye to John McLaughlin, TV's original tough political talker. Eleanor, you wrote that article, and were the first really to say that he had prostate cancer, and you didn't know that he had it when he was missing the shows, but at some point it did come to you, and you did go visit him. Can you tell us a little about that?
Yes, I visited him actually three times. He was at home with hospice care, and I told him that, I said, John, you made me who I am before I knew who I was. And it was 1983, and he summoned me to his then office on K Street, and the show was just getting underway. And he peppered me with all these questions, and I remembered two of them. One, what did I think of Barney Clark's heart transplant? He was actually a 61-year-old dentist who got the first artificial heart transplant. I think he lived 212 days or something, and there was a big furor over how much money it cost and was it ethically appropriate and so forth. And then he asked me what I thought of arms to Taiwan. And now these were two very different issues. And I kind of looked at him and I said, I'm a reporter. I was a reporter for Newsweek at the time. And I said, I don't have strong opinions. You know, if you're a reporter, you're kind of trained to cover both sides, not express your opinion. And I came out of the old school. And he kind of barked at me, you want to be on my show, you better get some strong opinions. And there I was then, sitting across from Pat Buchanan, who, as I said in my article in the Daily Beast, was the original culture warrior, who he would come on the show and then he would take leaves of absence to run for president three times. So on the right, on the extreme right. And then there was Bob Novak, who was a conservative columnist, and he was known in Washington as the Prince of Darkness. And so between the two of them, I could easily see where I was totally on the opposite side, and they would also get my blood going. I would want to get in there and sort of punch away and say, no, that's not right. So I quickly found my voice, and I thank the format for that, and I thank John for that. And so I became known, I like to think, as the voice of reason on the McLaughlin Group. But the show was oriented towards the right, and John would sometimes luxuriate in that, and I would say, hey, you know, no fair, it's three against one. I'd refer to the other three panelists. And he would say, oh, no, it's four against one. So, but, you know, we always moved on, and I feel like I kind of got my oar in, too. And a lot of women responded to me, especially in the early years, and they would tell me, you know, you hold your own. There are now so many of these shows, but this really was the first. And there are lots of imitators. But I don't think anybody is going to leave as big an imprint on the industry and on television talk and on politics as John McLaughlin.
The last time you went and visited with John, what was his mood like?
The last time I saw him was the Thursday before he died on the Tuesday. And, you know, I talked, but I'm not sure. He was drifting away. The earlier visit, he seemed more attentive. If you've had any experience with end of life, they kind of retreat into their own world, which is, I guess, a transition world, and they sleep a lot. But all of the hospice care people say they can hear everything. And on my first and second visits, when you think he's not paying attention, then he would suddenly enunciate something very clearly. And the makeup artist who's worked with him for years said that he would very clearly say to her, you know, bye-bye. And also the first Friday I visited, which was the Friday when we normally do the taping, he was in a hospital bed, but he was dressed in his normal clothes like he was going to the studio. And I think the woman who's been his partner now for a number of years, I think, you know, really kept him going by, you know, talking about the show. And, you know, not many people can keep doing what they love until almost nearly the very end. And he succeeded in doing that, and she helped with that. Her name is Maritza, and she deserves a lot of credit for giving him a very good and peaceful ending.
I was reading the New York Times this morning, and they did a great write-up on John. And one of the things that was kind of striking is there was a quote, of course, in the Daily Beast that's from you, Eleanor, and you say, if there was a Mount Olympus for talk show hosts, John McLaughlin would be on it. And the Times quoted Robert Novak, who was one of the original panelists, you mentioned him, from an interview on PBS in June of 2007. Of course, Robert's no longer with us, but he said of Mr. McLaughlin, he said, he may not be pure evil, but he's close to it.
Well, they did not part ways in a friendly manner. Bob Novak went off to CNN, as I recall. And, you know, they were combative. And I remember in all those early shows, after every show, a word count would be done. And Novak would often exceed John in the number of words. And John didn't like that. So, yeah. Now, in terms of how Bob Novak would define evil, I'm not quite sure. Novak was further to the right than John. I think John really sort of moderated over the years. And Novak also, midway through life or three-quarters through life, I'm not sure exactly when, converted to Catholicism. And so he was a devout Catholic. And while John was a former Jesuit priest, there wasn't a lot of visible reminders of that past. I mean, I don't think he went to church anymore, although when he traveled, he would always visit the Catholic churches in other countries. He was not dogmatic about religious issues the way Novak could be and the way Pat Buchanan can be much of the time. Pat is a very devout Catholic also. So I'm not sure exactly what Novak was getting at there, but, I could have a couple of interpretations.
But as a person who knew and worked with him even longer than Bob Novak did, you never saw that side of John.
I would, calling and describing anyone as evil, no. I mean, John could be quite, it was the voice of God, and he probably terrorized a lot of the people who worked for him, but if they managed to laugh, they got a very good Jesuitical education from him. I mean, he's a hard taskmaster. He was a rigorous intellectual. I mean, I think, he had his PhD and all that, and he loved, discussing sort of the finer points of an issue, and he loved to catch someone if you weren't totally up on, history in the 14th century or something like that. he was difficult. I mean, I'm certainly not going to make it sound like he was this hail fellow, well-met kind of person. But he could be, blustery and intellectually overbearing. Everything he was on the show, he was in private. Some people didn't like that. Some people pushed back and he liked people who could stand up to him. And I think, you know, Novak just found greener pastures elsewhere, but he certainly got his start in television on the McLaughlin Group.
Absolutely. Pat Buchanan's still with the McLaughlin Group, last remaining original cast member. Have you talked to Pat since John passed away?
I've only exchanged emails, but I did see him at the studio last Friday, and we all knew this was coming. And I think Pat is involved in making the arrangements for the funeral mass in whatever venue they end up choosing. So yeah, I mean he goes back with John to the Nixon White House, and so he is, you know, number one confidant.
Do you have a favorite memory of these last 30 years, over 30 years with John?
Wow. That's really hard to come up with, but, you know, maybe what fits the occasion is when my husband died, and you're in Ohio, Tom Brazitis. He was a columnist for the Cleveland Plain Dealer and
yes.
the Washington Bureau Chief.
Yeah.
And he died on a Wednesday, and it was March 30, so it was over sort of the Easter break. And the Pope also died in that same period, or he was ill, can't remember which now, but Harry Schiavo had died the day before Tom. She was the person, there was a lot of furor around, her feeding tube had been removed, and there were debates in the media and over the ethics of that. So there was a lot going on, and we weren't supposed to do a show. We had taped what we call an evergreen, and John called me and said, "You know, do you want to do the? Can you do the show on Friday?" And I jumped at the chance to sort of get back to what I considered, you know, my normal life after a traumatic experience. And so that Friday, he did the most moving tribute to my husband, saying that, you know, we've lost a member of our television family. And I was told later by the producer that he taped it ahead of time because when he was rehearsing, he couldn't get through it without breaking up, which told me something about the man. And it was a beautiful tribute to my husband. And it also had the wonderful side effect of letting a lot of people know that he had passed. And that made it a lot easier on me in terms of telling everybody.
Just
so I guess that really stands out for me. Yeah.
Yes. I have a few questions left here, Eleanor. One thing I noticed, and as I say, I've been a fan for a long time, the last few years he has sort of been in decline, and I think we've all seen that. I can't remember the last time he shouted out wrong at somebody. How did that change the show? Because he really was the lead
yeah.
personality. How did you think it changed the show?
Well, I think the panelists, we were told not to talk over each other so much because he really wasn't forceful enough to break us up. So we had to self-regulate more. And I think especially the last couple of shows that the panelists really, you know, carried the show, and his comments were more on the teleprompter. For a while, he always loved to have cards, but he sometimes get lost in the cards, and so they would urge him to just stick to the teleprompter. So, yeah, so he was not the dominant personality that he was in the past, but he would still, you know, muster the issue one and let's get out and the bye-bye. So, you know, the spine of the show was still there, but it had lost a lot of verve. And, you know, we all felt that. But as I said earlier in our conversation, I think, you know, we all wanted to pretend this could go on forever and that John, given his connections in the past to the church, maybe he was getting a special exemption and it would go on forever, but you know it doesn't, and when it finally ends, it is still a shock. It ends in its current form, I hope maybe we can keep it going, not only to honor John, but I think to provide the kind of political talk that is still, I think, unique in television. We all come from backgrounds, basically, of you know, reporting and opinionizing, and we come from different perspectives, and yet we can still kind of get along, and there is a continuity there that it would be nice to preserve. But we'll see. In the world of television, nothing is forever.
Yeah, isn't that the truth? I do want to ask one question, because I always found this interesting. I could not tell. I mean, of course, we all knew John was a conservative, but I could not tell, maybe because of age and what he was going through, did he like Trump?
You know, I don't think he really liked Trump, because if he did, he would have devoted more time on the show to Trump. I think he knew that any issue on Trump would invite Pat Buchanan to carry on about the issues that he and Trump have in common. And they're important issues: economic nationalism, immigration, and trade. And they are the issues that Pat Buchanan identified when he ran for president. And in many ways, Trump is the reincarnation of the Buchanan campaign. And John could have played into that more, but he didn't. And so that's why I kind of suspect that he didn't like Trump all that much. And he could be hard on President Obama, but then the red light would go off and he'd say, oh, he's so good. He really admired the way Obama carried himself on the world stage. I mean, John admired performance, and I think, like a lot of us in the media, he got a kick out of Trump initially. It was entertaining, but it moved rather quickly to concern, and now I think there's, you know, real, almost collective angst in the media about how to cover him. He's such a different presidential candidate, so outside the parameters of what we listen to. Anyway, so I have another call, which is another radio station, I have to take it.
Okay, can I just how are you going to remember John?
How am I going to remember him? Please read my piece in the Daily Beast.
Got it. Eleanor, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Eleanor Cliff, longtime panelist from the McLaughlin Group, and sadly, John McLaughlin passed away yesterday at the age of 89, and we're going to play it one more time here. The best of John McLaughlin, and then we'll come back with Sean Kraft and talk about this and maybe some other things. Here's John.
Here's the host, John McLaughlin.
Issue one. On a doomsday scale of 0 to 10. 0 meaning zero doom. 10 meaning absolute metaphysical doom, a total wipeout, annihilation, nothing remaining.
Exit question. Which end of Pennsylvania Avenue will drive the public policy agenda for the next 2 years? Capitol Hill or the White House? Patrick.
The answer is Capitol Hill. What happens next? Fred Bonds.
Eleanor, Minority Party Cliff. Also are the big losers, the tired, the poor, the huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the homeless, the tempest-tossed, the wretched refuse of teeming shores.
Question on a political probability scale of 0 to 10. 0 being zero probability and 10 meaning metaphysical absolute certitude.
The Klansman is a good candidate.
What?
Well, there's a twist. Foley's a winner. What do you know, Jack? Worst administration appointment today, Pat Buchanan.
Bye-bye.
And bye-bye, John. We'll miss him. Sean Kraft, you're in studio. Been listening to the whole thing there. What are your memories of John McLaughlin going at age 89? I know the answer to this question before I ask it. You have no idea who John McLaughlin is. You've never watched the show.
Yeah, I never watched the show. But you guys really summed it all up. I mean, it sounds like he was a...
34 years, how'd you never catch the show?
I don't know. I just never watched it. What channel was it on?
PBS, Channel 12, Friday nights at 8:30.
I never watched PBS.
DVR. I know, no Sesame Street, no Mr. Rogers. If you have a memory of John McLaughlin or would like to share anything about the Eleanor Cliff interview, please give us a call. It was nice of her to join us today so quickly after John's passing, which was just yesterday.
740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. John McLaughlin, a legend in the world of television. And I just want to say this. Everybody always asks me where the idea for The Exchange came from, because it's been on two different radio stations, it's been on television. Everybody thinks it was The View or David Brinkley or shows like that where they get people together. It's the McLaughlin Group. You know, everybody gets together, everybody gives their opinion, even the host. And that's what made John McLaughlin different. He was the host and moderator, but he gave his opinions, which I thought was okay.
And plus, he owned a show.
Well, that's another one for me.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll be the new John McLaughlin. Nobody can replace John McLaughlin.
You know, he thought, I guess he was Stern.
Oh, he could be. You think I get obnoxious with people. What he used to do in his day was, if you were giving an opinion, let's see, this is what he would do. Say, give your opinion on something. Let's see, I'm going to give you, what do you think of Donald Trump right now?
He's different.
Well, you got to speak more than a few words. You're like, you're giving your opinion on television.
Well, I mean, he just...
This is what John McLaughlin would do. Go ahead. Okay. What do you think of Donald Trump? That's how he spoke. Sean Kraft, what do you think of Donald Trump?
He's not very good.
Wrong! And he'd go on to the next person. That's how he did the show for years. And then at the end, he always did, bye-bye.
It's like, it'll be...
No, mine is heading to the dugout.
I'll use bye-bye.
You can't do it like him, though.
Bye-bye.
No, not bye-bye. No. He went, bye-bye.
I'll go bye-bye.
He was an interesting guy. He'd always start off the show by issue one. Maybe I should start doing this. Issue one, Donald Trump will get security clearance from the United Nations today. Sean Kraft, what do you think of that?
I think it's interesting.
Wrong! And you're on to the next person. But that's how he did the show for so many years. He just was so animated and so comical. But he really made political talk, just people sitting around, interesting and entertaining because he was entertaining. And he had a very booming and assertive voice, as Eleanor Cliff will attest to.
Wonder why we never talked about John McLaughlin.
Well, I mean, his show was still going on. It was on for 34 years, once a week, every Friday night. He just missed his first show last week.
I guess he dies, we talk about it.
Well, what else would... Why would we talk about it? It's hard to talk about another show. I mean, it's not like we get on here and say, well, what's going on at The View today? What's going on at Rachel Ray?
Well, I guess I'm concerned is because you just now brought it up since the exchange...
It's based on that, yes.
But all these years, you never said that?
Nobody ever asked me. If you would have said, what is The Exchange based on, I would have told you. Because we try to get people together. You got to have more than one person. You got to have more than two people, really. You got to have three or four. You try to get different opinions. You bring callers in, and you give your opinion. That's what it is. And you never do more than an hour. Never do more than an hour, because you want to keep it fresh.
You know, she was a really nice lady this morning. I thought she... She did the interview pretty well.
I do hope people look at the article because it is free. The Daily Beast is a big news site. That's who Eleanor works for now. She used to work for Newsweek, and of course she's still on the McLaughlin Group. But the Daily Beast and the article is saying goodbye to John McLaughlin, TV's original tough political talker.
So you don't think John's related to Sarah McLaughlin?
You're on the line. Go ahead.
Hi, it's me again.
Hey, Gail. Hey. How's it going?
Good morning, Gail.
You know, I couldn't stand to watch McLaughlin. I thought he's the rudest guy on television.
Well, you know...
You're wrong. They're not always wrong.
Well, he didn't even tell him. He didn't even put the adjective you're in there. He just say, wrong.
Wrong.
Yeah, he was something.
Yeah, wrong answer. Hey, you know, a couple weeks ago on the Exchange Club, they started talking about how you go out and you said you did not ever want to be cremated.
Oh, me? Yes, that's true. That's true.
Yeah. You know, that's your only chance to die with a smoking hot body. So you might want to change that.
You go
out big.
You know, I'll tell you. You know, here's my thing about cremation. And boy, we've talked about a lot of things on this station recently. I know Marge, and she won't mind me saying this because she's talked about it. She recently decided she's going to go in the mausoleum. Charlie wants to be cremated. I'm still pretty sure I want to be buried. Sean talks about being frozen, but there's not enough ice in Marion County to do that. So the problem will remain...
you know, what do you want done? Now, I don't think we're going to know where we are, so burial's okay, but I just don't like, I don't want, I lived in this body for however long I lived in it, and the thought of burning it up to me doesn't make me happy.
What makes the difference? You won't even know about it.
Well, that's right, I won't know about it, but I guess it's the thought beforehand that it won't happen makes me feel happy.
You know, my daughter understands that, you know, I intend to be cremated, but and so what she wants to do with the ashes, you can have those made into a glass, anything, and she's looked up some that make really good, a little, I don't know what you call them, little statues or anything.
And some necklaces. I know people wear them around their neck.
Yeah, they do.
But, you know, I just, when I'm gone, I kind of want to be gone. I have a whole weird thing about death anyway, because I understand visitations, because that is where family gets together and talks. I get that. But I don't get showings. I don't want people to see me dead.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess they're supposed to be for the people who are left, but I don't care much for them.
I never saw.
I've been to several.
Yeah, I mean, I don't care.
I tell you what I hate. The last three I've gone to, the person giving up the, you know, the speech. One of them just read from the guy's obituary. That's all he knew. And all three cases, they had never known the person.
Well, see, I've been asked to speak at some people's funerals, and I don't mind it. But I'm telling you, that's a tough crowd. That's a tough room, because you get up there and they're laying right in front of you, and you're trying to speak to the crowd and you're speaking about them, and nobody's happy, and a lot of times the family is really broken up, as they should be. It's understandable, but it's a tough room. But I do like the idea, even though the invitation is not always my favorite thing. I do always get up and do it. And sometimes it has been rather rewarding. I'll tell you, I don't know if I've ever told this story on the air, but when Madge Cooper died, who was the grand lady of radio here in Marion, for people who don't know, her nephew asked me to speak at the funeral. And she had a very big funeral at a church here at the Richland Road Church of Christ. And I had to sit up. They have a big stage and a big pulpit. It's not a smaller church. And I got up to speak, and people laughed. Now, part of it, I think, it was easier because she was 99, and I did know her well, and there were a lot of media there that I did know in the audience, but I could tell funny stories about her, and they would laugh. And when it was over, the funeral, everybody got up and applauded her, stood on their feet and applauded her as she was going out.
Yeah.
And that, to me, that's a funeral.
Yep.
There wasn't a great deal of sadness there, because she had lived a great long life. She enjoyed her life. But I didn't mind speaking at that one. But there were other ones that, you know, sometimes you wonder why you're there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd prefer to go out totally anonymous, you know, just, I'm gone on someday, that's it.
Well, here's all I hope. I hope on John McLaughlin's tombstone there's an epitaph and it says, "Wrong!"
That's or right.
Here lies John. Wrong. He's actually around somebody's neck somewhere.
Yep.
You say you didn't like John McLaughlin?
Oh, no, I couldn't stand him because of his rudeness.
Well, but the show, I think if he hadn't been that way, there wouldn't have been a show. It just would have been another show.
I'm afraid I only watched about two and then said, that's enough for me.
Well, I to this day, I watched.
I didn't like Buchanan.
Well, Buchanan's to the right. There's no doubt about that. But, boy, I will miss watching that, because what that show did that no others did, it investigated some topics that you never hear anywhere else. I like that about it. And I did like Eleanor Clift is very much to the left. Pat Buchanan's very much to the right. They would always have two other personalities who were not broadcasters. They were columnists, or they wrote for the internet or something like that. And John gave his opinion, which was very unique, because usually the moderator does not give their opinion.
They want to be neutral.
They want to be neutral. I try to be neutral, but on the exchange, I do let it go a little bit, because I think that in that frame, it's okay when you're conversating with other people. As long as I'm unbiased in an interview.
Oh, you never are, but No,
I'm never biased, or I'm never unbiased.
I'm not sure. I'd have to think about that.
Well, I'll tell you, I think in an interview, I am pretty fair with people.
Yeah.
But if we're going to talk anything else, I mean, boy, some days you got 2 hours to fill. You got to give your opinion.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Hey, well, thanks for calling in.
Sure thing.
Bye-bye.
Again, the phone lines are open, 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Remembering John McLaughlin. And remember, the first 15 minutes of the next hour will be devoted to Janice Stillman, editor of the Old Farmer's Almanac, who's going to tell us what the winter is going to be like here. You're not going to want to miss that. By the way, she's the first female editor since 1792 of the Old Farmer's Almanac. What do you think?
It's going to be a mild winter.
I didn't ask you what the weather was going to be like. I'm saying, what do you think of the interview next hour? You don't know what the weather... Do you have a copy of the almanac?
I just know.
You don't. How do you know?
Because I...
What, did one of your many injuries start to perk up?
I just have a... I'm part psychic.
Which part?
You know, Jackie Hearsom, our long time... Speaking of the devil, she told everybody has a little bit of psychic in them.
740-383-9944 if you'd like to weigh in. 740-383-9944. And we will weigh in after the Farmer's Almanac. Talk about the winter. Talk about current events. Not a whole lot. Hey, Donald Trump gave a fair speech last night.
He's losing it.
No, I think last night was one of his better speeches.
Yeah, well, last night you're right.
I think he got on the teleprompter, and I think he made a little sense. He wasn't too nice to the African-American community, but... He was, I thought his, there were some good points in his speech last night.
He calmed down a little bit last night.
Now today, he gets his security, you know, his national intelligence. Do you think that's a good idea?
No.
To give him national intelligence that people don't know?
No.
Got to do it.
I know. Not good.
I don't think he'd put the country in jeopardy.
You don't think so?
No.
No, probably not. I don't, well, I don't know. Depends on if he takes his medication that day or something.
Boy, you've really flip-flopped Donald Trump.
I have, yeah.
Okay, we understand why you started going for Hillary rather than Trump, but what has now brought out such a vigorous thing where you even talk negative about this man you used to support?
I'll tell you why. You know, at first, like I said, it was comical, but he's
got... Wrong!
he went off the deep end, off the train track.
What's the worst thing in his opinion that he's done? In your opinion?
Well, I mean, it's when he started making fun of people, I think. A lot more. Especially when he started making fun of a nationality. You know, that judge. I mean, that's just ridiculous. I mean, judge is there to protect whatever's going on, you know. And when you start making fun of people like that, it's just... To me, it's crossing the line.
By the way, tomorrow on the show, we're going to be joined by Myra McPherson from 12:15 to 1:15. She's going to discuss the first woman ever to run for president, who she's researched and written a book about. The first woman to run for president was Victoria Woodhull in 1872, and she was from Homer, Ohio, Victoria Woodhull was. So Myra McPherson will be here to discuss her tomorrow from 12:15 to 1 p.m. And then 1:15 to 2 p.m., 40th Treasurer of the United States, Mary Ellen Withrow, with a surprise call-in guest you're not going to want to miss. And I'm sure that will be politics du jour in that hour.
Hillary Clinton. It's her.
Nobody said it was going to be Hillary. Do you think Hillary's got time to call into this show?
She's a good friend with her.
Well, she does like Hillary Clinton, but I don't think she's got time to call into this show. Wonder if she ever met John McLaughlin.
Can ask her tomorrow.
You have no idea who he is.
I have no clue.
Okay, I'm only going to do this once. Rest in peace, John McLaughlin. We're coming back next hour, but for this hour, this is Scott Spears saying bye-bye.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, Marion, Ohio, the talking place. For grandson of President Warren G. Harding, Jim Bless.
And for the first...